Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, November 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Food Friday's here for the cookers and bakers nearly every single week, but this show might be the most important one we've ever done. At least that's what the script says. Well, by the premise, by the bit, I suppose. Because today, Deanna Fox and Chef Rick Orlando are here to help those people out preparing a Thanksgiving meal. If you have a question about turkey, stuffing, pie, or anything at all related to the big dinner, now's the time to call 1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you may email us at voxpop@wamc.org, but it's 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. Food Friday Thanksgiving Hotline opens up with Deanna Fox and Rick Orlando right after the news. Well, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Thanksgiving. It's the Thanksgiving hotline on Food Friday. We have two Food Friday favorites in the studio to help you prepare the big meal. Deanna Fox is a cooking instructor and food and agriculture journalist based in the Capital Region. Her work appears locally in the Times Union, the Daily Gazette, and all over Albany, as well as in national publications like USA Today, the Washington Post, Eater, The Kitchen, and Beer Advocate. Deanna is also a co-host of the new WAMC podcast, Watch, Read, Listen, Feed. Her work and classes can be found at foxonfood.com. Rick Orlando is the chef manager of the New World Bistro Bar in Albany. You may have seen him taste victory on the Food Network's Chopped program, his PBS show, Rick Orlando's TV Kitchen, or maybe you heard his podcast, 1 Million String Beans. Deanna and Rick, welcome back to the show.
Hello. Oh, Ray.
Nice to have you both here. Preparing for Thanksgiving. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Or if you so desire, you can, if maybe you're the shy retiring type, you can email. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But it's a call-in show. So, you know, let's buck up and call in.
Call in. Let's hear your voice.
800-348-2551. All right, Deanna Fox, you're getting ready for Thanksgiving at your household, I assume?
I am. I just made the stock for the gravies, and I started some pie doughs and got some vegetables prepped already. So
nice.
Got my turkey set. So,
tell us about the stock. Is it bone broth?
Bone
the
broth.
The term that I despise the most?
Crap, that's a crap term. Yeah. All you know, stock and broth are not quite the same.
Okay,
but
whatever.
The term bone, if it has meat in it, of course it's a bone broth.
You make a point.
Yeah.
So your stock, tell us about it.
Yeah.
Is it rising?
I wish it was.
That's a good point, though, because I've mentioned that, too.
Yeah.
If it has bones, it should be stock. If it has meat, it should be broth. So bone broth is kind of a
redundant
misnomer.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
But, you know, listen, a generation needs to own it. Let them own it. As long as they're eating it, I'm happy.
All right.
So I do mine in a big Dutch oven. I have like a 10-quart Dutch oven.
I love those.
And I put some, I had chicken carcass. I use chicken carcasses and I put in a few aromatics. So like onion. I have a lot of scraps. Like I take my kitchen scraps and I put them in a Ziploc bag and put them in the freezer and then I dump them in. So scraps from cooking up onion and carrot and celery and some parsnip maybe. And I throw in some bay leaf and some whole black pepper and I throw in a few whole cloves too.
Nice.
And
just now, you're doing
cover
a whole bird,
water.
A whole turkey?
To cook, yeah. I spatchcock my turkey.
You have the giblets?
Yeah, I throw them in. I don't throw them in when I make the stock, but I throw them in when I warm the stock up on the stove, and I throw all the...
You brown them?
The neck, yep.
Yeah, brown them good and pour the stock over. That's how you get the turkey flavor out of chicken stock. That's the shortcut.
There it is.
People saying, what should I do? Should I buy a turkey in advance and make turkey stock? I'm like, have chicken stock, but then take your giblets, maybe your wingtips, your neck... Season it a little, brown it, and then add your stock to that, and that chicken stock will amazingly taste like turkey.
Well, Rick Orlando, you brought a whole turkey, which I think is a first on Food Friday. Well
done.
Small
guy.
That's pretty good, man. Yeah, tell us about how you do that.
Well, first of all, just so you know, this is going to be my first Thanksgiving in 25 years that I'm not cooking for the masses. I only have a mere 30 at my house, which is nice.
Well, yeah, that's nothing.
I have a turkey 101 on my website and on my Facebook and everywhere.
But this is a radio
show.
This
is a brined turkey.
Yeah.
And even though the New York Times came up with an article today saying brining is over, that's just because there's people, they just need content. Brining is still the best way to make a turkey.
Oh my gosh.
Challenge anybody. Dry brine, no. It takes the water out of the turkey. Wet brine, yes. It makes it juicy.
Now, you know, people on the show have said, no, you don't do the wet brine.
Whatever. You do whatever you want. I always say
Rick Orlando says to do wet brine, and that's what we do at our house.
That is a moist breast that came out of my oven at noon and was put in a cooler. So that's a fascinating thing.
Rick is actually teaching at Different Drummer's Kitchen tonight. He's coming in and teaching for us about how to make this turkey.
Yeah,
so we have a few spots left, and if anybody wants
that's cool.
to brave the snow.
What is the website for that place?
DifferentDrummersKitchen.com.
Yes.
Yeah, we were going to do it last night, but we postponed. So I said, we'll do it all in one day.
Nice.
The other thing I do with this turkey, I have a high heat, low heat method. A lot of people cook things slowly and then crank the oven up at the end, but I find that to be scientifically wrong.
Me too.
I turn the oven to 500 and put it in there till it's looking sizzly and golden, and then I tent it with some foil and turn it down to 275.
And what's your logic behind that?
That the molecules of the protein get moving really fast when it's really hot and get tough, and when they're slow down, just like braising, the tenderness is more apparent on your mouth, so that you finish it slowly and you use your probe thermometer and keep watching the temperature till it hits about 170 on the breast. And then the last thing I do just for fun is I have a little smoker box. I put it on top of my stove, get it smoking, I throw it in the oven when I turn the turkey off and close the door and just let it sit in there with that smoke for the last 15 minutes or so to give it a little yum. Not smoke through, just a little yum.
And also the look. I mean, this looks like, it looks almost fake. It is so perfect. It's a great looking bird.
Thank you. I kind of like the imperfections, a little bit of char, a little bit of blister.
You
don't want it to be too golden brown looking like a Miami Beach suntan model. You know, you want it to look a little more like an old Vegas bartender.
Nice. All right. Let's do an email here, and then we'll get to the phones at 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. This one came in about an hour ago from Heather, who says, I'm unable to listen to Rick Orlando this afternoon, but we'll listen later. I'd very much like to hear about his favorite recipe for Brussels sprouts for Thanksgiving dinner. Blech. I'm slated to bring them as my contribution and would like to mix up my standard routine, and that is from Heather. Brussels sprouts.
You want to start with this?
Deanna Fox.
Well, I make.
How do you? What's your favorite Brussels sprout prep?
Well, so I do mine. I parboil them. So I trim off the outer leaves if there's any outer leaves that need to come off, and save those. And I flash fry them in a little oil like Rick does, and eat those as like my chef snack while I'm making everything else.
Nice.
And then otherwise I cut them in half, I parboil them, and then I get some bacon fat going in a cast iron skillet, and I put them in so they get seared and crispy, and I throw in some sherry, cooking sherry or sherry vinegar, some salt and some pepper, and some grapes, some just table grapes they cut in half, and some pecans they toast up in that bacon fat, and then that's it for me.
That sounds really fancy. Yeah. It sounds really good.
It's like a 10-minute thing.
You know, Brussels sprouts are inherently have a little bit of bitterness from all the minerals in them, so the grapes are a good idea. I make them a million ways. We do the trio at the restaurant. We do them three ways. One is classic. We toss them with olive oil, whole cloves of garlic, lots of rosemary, and balsamic vinegar, and just bake them under foil until they're almost done. Then we take the foil off and let the skin get crispy, and the skin, the outer leaves get crispy.
Yeah.
The other way we do them is we cut them in half and parboil them in salted water like you do until they're just tender. And then when we're ready to eat them, I mince garlic and walnuts to the same size, and I put a big knob of butter and saute the garlic and walnuts together, and then throw those Brussels sprouts in there and let them coat with the garlic and walnuts until they kind of stick. And then the last one we do, which is fun, is we shave them and saute them with either speck or prosciutto, sage, and a little bit of either sherry vinegar or cider vinegar to get kind of like that salt and bocca kind of flavor, the prosciutto and sage, you know? Mm-hmm.
Now, you stole Sarah LaDuke's recipe.
What was that?
Well, maybe she stole yours.
What was that?
She was recounting pretty much the same recipe in the newsroom.
Ah, good for her.
Or Brussels sprouts, yeah.
Yeah, and then we were just in New Orleans, and we went to a place called Mofo, which is Cajun.
I'm sorry?
Mofo. M-O-P-H-O.
It's
Mofo.
All right, Zach the engineer is ready to hit the button.
Bisyllabic play on words. But they do a Vietnamese Cajun thing. The chef there is really, really good, Mike Galati. And we had some awesome half Brussels sprouts that were roasted and then tossed with fish sauce and ginger and chili paste, and they were just a treat. They were really good.
You know, I have a visceral reaction whenever I hear or see Brussels sprouts. I despise them, and some people are like that, but I think it must go back to my childhood when they were done in an inartful way.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mush.
So
it, yeah, because they should be kind of tender. You don't want them too hard in the middle because the flavors pop. But you shouldn't unless you're doing something like a salad. It's funny because I'm writing a memoir now, and one of the things I wrote about was foods I hated as a kid and how my mother used to take frozen Brussels sprouts and put margarine and table salt on them and expect me to eat them. You know?
Good for you.
Sit at the table till midnight staring at them.
Deanna Fox is here, and Rick Orlando. We prepare for Thanksgiving here on A Food Friday, and we'll take a call or two before the first break. And Dave in Bethlehem. Dave, you're first.
Yes, I'm looking for a way, or what do you guys recommend about cooking the turkey so that the breast doesn't dry out? I've heard people talk about start cooking it upside down and then flip that, but that's a little hard to maneuver. And the second question is, I didn't hear the ingredients on that shaved Brussels sprout. Did you say speck?
Speck is like a smoked prosciutto. But if you go to rickorlando.com and click on recipes, my Brussels sprouts recipes, they're all right up front for the holidays, so they're right there.
Okay. Yeah. I'm on the road, so I'm going to hang up, and if you could just give me some pointers about the keeping the turkey breast moist without drying the whole thing out, that'd be great.
All right. Okay. Who wants to go first?
So I roast, when I roast a turkey or a chicken whole, I roast it upside down, so breast side down. And you don't get that like glistening, beautiful skin quite the way you do here with Rick's, but the meat on the inside stays really, really juicy because all the fat from the dark meat on the backside of the bird trickles down through the breast meat and like saturates the breast meat and makes it really juicy and tender. I also do what's called spatchcocking, and it makes my turkey cook in like, I don't know, 2/3 of the time. So I cut the backbone. I dislocate the hip joints of the turkey, and I take a big kitchen knife or poultry shears, and I cut through the ribs and the collarbone, and I take the backbone out, and it lays flat. And then you can
flatten it out, like if you're run over by a car.
So like if you've ever seen like chicken under a brick or something, it's like that.
Yeah.
And then you can do that ahead, and you can take that backbone out, like Rick said earlier, and you can roast it and then throw it into your stock. It's really good. There's a lot of meat on that backbone. But the other thing I do, I did it last week, actually. I was cutting out all these herbs from my garden, my sage, my rosemary, my parsley, my thyme, and I took like a pound of butter and I softened it. And I mixed in my stand mixer, the butter and all those chopped up herbs and some salt. And I have that, put it in different packages, and I put it on the table. I put it in with the mashed potatoes, and then I take it and I pull the skin of the turkey away from the meat, and I put all that butter in there, and I rub it, and all the butter comes. And then when you make your gravy from your pan drippings, you don't have to add any more fat, and you just add a little flour or cornstarch, and you make with your stock, and
butter-based, it's spatchcock deliciousness.
All right. Yeah. Well, you know what? On that happy note, we'll take a break. 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando is here. Deanna Fox. It's Food Friday, don't you know? Thanksgiving. 800-348-2551. Vox Pop Food Friday. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox is here. Rick Orlando is here. And they're here to help you get ready for Thanksgiving. And we'll get back to the phones here in a moment. But this one came in via email from Karen. And Karen writes, "My family decided we really do not like turkey. This year we're doing surf and turf. However, we love the traditional sides, especially stuffing. What would you suggest as one of our non-traditional dinner? For one of our non-traditional dinner.
I would do a cornbread and sausage stuffing, because when you think about it, if you're doing surf and turf, when you make like oysters Rockefeller or clams casino, you do like meat with the clam and some breadcrumb on top. So it could almost be like that.
Well, that's a good idea.
That's a good idea. And traditionally, lobster and clams are what were eaten at Thanksgiving.
That's right. Bringing that back to the 1600s.
That's right. Bringing it. Yeah. Well, where are you? You're
on the ocean.
Go to the ocean. So, yeah, clams, I think, are great. We make clams every year. We make them on the half shell. We do clams. Oysters are very popular. As far as a non-traditional stuffing, you can go like to a grain stuffing, dressing more, called more like dressing, like with quinoa and apples and sweet potatoes. You can go with farro. You can go with lentils. You can go with a mix of all that. And as far as the cornbread and sausage, that's what we're making today at my cooking class. We're doing a Southwestern play, which is a chorizo and blue cornbread stuffing.
Oh, how about
that? So the chorizo gives you all that great Mexican flavor in there and all that great red fat.
Yeah, I actually hope, Karen, that you like seek out some venison, because that would be an amazing. That's such a great idea to do the lobster and the shellfish and like a venison loin. That
a
would
be seagull.
Awesome.
Stop it. Nice. Some squab.
Hey.
I had squab at my wedding.
I like squab.
All right, fair
enough.
First course.
If anyone has any questions by homing pigeon, we'll cook it tonight.
Sorry, it's a sore subject. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Chuck in Hudson. Hello, Chuck.
How you doing?
All right.
I'm calling up about the cooking the turkey upside down.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you got to put it on a rack so you don't squash the whole thing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's definitely an endeavor flipping it back.
Yeah,
when it's 350 degrees and spewing
well, you have
turkey
to,
fat,
you flip that over easy, and then you brown the top. But you baste it with brown apple cider, and I put an onion in it and Granny Smith apple and garlic.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds
well,
good.
That works. I mean, you know, if you work on your brining, you don't have to do that because it'll stay moist enough when it cooks if you brine it properly. The brining, basically through osmosis, will lend almost 10% more weight to the bird that gently steams inside the breast. But it's also controlled temperature. If you start your turkey at a high temperature and get it looking crispy, but you know it's raw, and then turn your oven down to about 275 and give it about 12 minutes per pound, the breast will stay moister because the high heat, you know, the breast doesn't have a lot of internal fat. So you need to have some moisture
right
there. So you want to keep the internal temperature of that bird below 180. You don't want the bird to boil. Once it boils, it's dry. And a lot of people cook it till the breast is over 200 degrees and then you lose all the internal liquid. So the science of that is get that temperature to creep up. Get a little probe thermometer. You can buy one at Different Drummer's Kitchen. They're fabulous. And, you know, I usually set a timer. Like, I'll do the math. Okay, I got a 20-pound turkey. I'm going to set it for 12 minutes, whatever. It's going to be 240 minutes. And then when that timer goes off, I'll stick the probe thermometer in a few spots. And if it needs to go a little more, I'll set the timer for 15 more minutes.
Yeah.
But once it hits 170, turn it off and let it just rest in the oven, and you're not going to boil out the deliciousness.
Okay.
So, unless you like flipping turkeys, which I'm cool with, but I know my wife gets in a panic when I flip anything in the kitchen. So
flipping turkey, that's got to be a euphemism for something. Let's go to John in Schenectady. John, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. My question really doesn't have to do so much with the food itself, but with the entertaining part about this, I guess. When you're at home, I'm single and I'm going to have about 13 family members over. And I always kind of dread this because of the cleanup involved in these big projects. And I was wondering what's your philosophy about this so that when they all parade out, I don't go back up in that kitchen and see that horror scene.
Okay, here's what we do at my house, John. We have 30 people. We get everyone to kick in $10. And then we post on Facebook, Thanksgiving helper needed for the day.
You're kidding me.
And so we have a person who we actually know who's done some catering with us. They'll come from 2 to 10, clean up,
for
load the dishwasher.
Bucks?
Yeah.
I'll do it for
day.
$300.
Right? But think about it. If you say to everybody, kick in $10 each, $130, you can get somebody to come in for 4 or 5 hours, load and unload your dishwasher once or twice, clean the pots, and leave the place nice.
That's a great idea. Yeah, I would
That's
say.
That's a great idea.
I always just make sure, I think the first step in making sure that it goes smoothly is to start with a clean kitchen. So just make sure that your dishwasher is unloaded and your sink is clean of dishes and kind
Perfect.
Of clean as you go. And you will have a bunch, if you can tackle like the big cooking implements as you go, when you have to do the plates and that kind of thing, it's a little bit easier. But I also suggest just having a glass of bourbon at the end of the night and doing it in the morning.
Yeah,
well, it depends on your dogs and cats. Actually, that's a really good point. When I was playing music in Boston, we would do these post-gig parties at my house, and we learned that a dirty house tends to get dirtier, and a clean house makes people nervous. So Liz would, like, clean the whole house, and people would, where do I put this empty beer can as opposed to,
just throw it anywhere, throw it on the floor, that sort of thing. In my house, you know, in theory, the women, the moms and the wives and such will do most of the cooking, and then The men do the cleaning up. I mean, it's only fair, right?
I like it. Yeah.
And see, in my house, the men do all the cooking. So.
Well, there you go. So it should be the other way around.
Not all the cooking, but the bulk of the
men do
stuff.
All the cooking, and then the hired hand does the cleaning up, apparently,
you know,
in your house.
Some people need something to do on Thanksgiving, make a little money. And you know what? The person always gets to have some drinks with us, and they get to eat, and we make friends.
Nice. Can you write it off on your taxes?
Shh.
Okay, fair enough. Back to the phones. And Matthew in Kinderhook. Matthew, you're on.
All right. I used to brine the turkey in a big 5-gallon bucket for 2 days in the spare fridge until we started getting fresh organic turkeys from a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one Thanksgiving I actually picked up the bird the day before Thanksgiving, and the body was still warm.
Yikes, sounds like a crime scene.
Well, yeah, it had literally been butchered that morning that I picked it up. And that was the most tender, moist bird, because it had never even been frozen.
No such thing as rigor mortis with that bird.
Huh.
Yeah, it hadn't even got rigor mortis. It was so, and from that point on, we would get organic turkeys from friends. We now get it from another friend. My son used to work for the first farm that we would get it at. And we used to joke that we were having a friend of our son's over for Thanksgiving dinner.
Ah,
very nice.
One of the birds.
Because he used to play with the birds while he was cleaning the coops.
Yeah.
Yeah, really fresh like that is really good. And if the turkey's right, I mean, you don't have to brine it. But I find that in general, the brining helps take some of the sweat and pressure away. The other thing that's a little bit on the funkier side, and of course, Americans get squeamish about this, but I've dry aged my turkeys for 7 days sometimes. You know, this one wasn't, but a couple of years ago, I got a couple of turkeys, put them right in my spare cooler with nothing on them and let them just dry age in the refrigerator the way the French do ducks and the way we do steaks. And it actually helps the enzymes help to break down the breast meat a little bit. It makes it more tender.
So nothing on it when you dry age it?
Nope. Get a little funk going, you know? I like the funk. James Brown of turkeys.
Sure. Jump back. Here we go. Marge in Kingston. Marge, you're on.
Hi. Yeah, I'm actually Marge from Margaretville.
Oh, hello.
I was asking, I have to bring a turkey to a party, a dinner, and already cooked. So I was thinking of slicing it up and putting it in a pan. I was just, if that's the best thing to do, and reheat it there, what's the best way to reheat it?
Do you take this one?
All right. Well, for my money, I would not slice it first.
Oh, okay.
Because you'll lose all the juices. Then you'll end up basically having cold cuts when you get there.
Yeah.
No, what I did with this one I brought here was I got a slightly smaller pan than I cooked it in, and I laid on my table big sheets of foil and kind of put the pan on the foil and did it like a big Jiffy Pop, like folded it up over the top and put it in a cooler so it came warm. And then when you want to make, if it's still warm, just slice it and hit it with very hot gravy, and that'll warm it right up. Once you slice anything, the juices escape. And so what you'll end up with is relative. I mean, the thighs will always be good, but the breast will dry out. I mean, it's more convenient to do that way. But I'm not, you know, I find that you more often than not, you'll have a dry bird. And gravy will be the most important part of the dinner as opposed to the bird.
Wow. All right. Great. Thank you.
Marge, thanks a lot for the call. By the way, the gravy on the turkey that you brought, Rick, is really, really good. Any tricks with that?
Yeah, the only thing that I do is when I deglaze the turkey pan to make the gravy, I use apple cider.
Mm.
You don't taste apple, but it kind of, the little essence of apple, the little aromas in there, sort of the way you would use white wine to deglaze a pan for chicken. And I like that traditional thing of using apple cider. Not that apples are indigenous to here, but they're pretty old. And that's it. I mean, I basically take a little bit of the fat that's left over and whisk it with a little flour. This actually is with cornstarch, not flour. And then use a little chicken stock and deglaze the pan and put cider in there. But the cider, it's kind of a little secret because you don't taste the cider, but it definitely gives you a little rounder flavor, a little more aroma, a little more earthiness.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Food Friday. Rick Orlando and Deanna Fox are here to help you through Thanksgiving. And let's go over to another person who might or might not be in Kingston. This one's Peter. Hello, Peter.
Hey, how you doing, Rick? How you doing?
Hey, Peter. Is this Peter Wetzler?
Yes, it is.
Hey, how's it going on, buddy?
How you doing, Rick?
Good.
Hey, I wanted to mention an accidental discovery I made from brining. When I brine, I grab the last of the sage from our garden and throw that in the brine with salt, but and a bunch of things. But the other year, Julie had bought this lavender that looked like sage. It was a different kind of lavender, and I didn't know. And I thought I was like stuffing, I thought I was throwing all this sage in my brine, but it was lavender. And I got the most, we had the tenderest, most delicious turkey using lavender for the brine.
You mellowed it out. Deanna, you want to talk about lavender and turkey?
I don't know anything about lavender and turkey because I've never done it, but lavender in baking is delicious and cooking and making dressings. It's got such a nice floral flavor, and there's so many different types of lavender, and there's a lot of local farms that are growing lavender now. Excuse me. So, yeah, I mean, God bless. If lavender turkey works out, go for it.
Yeah, I have a little aversion to lavender because my grandmother used to put lavender soap bars in all everywhere, and like every time I eat anything with too much lavender, I think of my grandmother's underwear drawer, which is pretty weird.
Okay, well, yeah, that's disturbing on about 12 levels.
I like lavender in desserts, and I like it with vanilla and certain things. But hey, you know what? I'm not going to try it with the whole turkey, but I'll try it with the chicken leg first, and we'll see how it comes out.
All right, Peter, thanks for the call. Thanks, our number Peter. Here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Thanksgiving prep and serving and cleaning up, all part of the game here today. It's 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox, you brought a dessert, and it's nice.
Oh,
it's a little different.
Really good.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, I've done so many pie shows. I was like, what pie? I can't think of anything new. I've brought in Dutch apple pies. I've brought in pumpkin pies. I've brought in chocolate bourbon pecan pies and that peanut butter thing with the bacon.
That peanut butter thing.
Thang. So anyway, thang with an A.
So what'd you make?
This is good.
This is just... I don't know what it is. It's like kind of a pear tart. It's kind of creme brulee. It's a little bit of both. So it's just a plain old pie crust they made. And if you go onto the WAMC website, you can find my pie crust recipe. It's definitely there. And put that in, and I blind baked it. So
what does that
I put mean? It in a spring in a tart pan where the bottom comes out. And I took a piece of parchment paper and I laid it flat in the bottom. Oh, before I did that, I did what's called docking. So you take a fork and you poke little holes in the bottom of your pie crust so that the steam can escape so you don't get bubbles. And I put a piece of parchment paper down and some pie weights. I use dried beans. I use black beans because that
works. Pie weights?
Pie weights. You can get these little ceramic or metal balls that are called pie weights that keep
it weight
down.
At Different
Drummer's
Kitchen.
Okay, fine.
But you can use dried rice or dried beans. I just used beans last night. And enough of a layer where it covers the bottom once you put that.
And black beans are great because if one slips away, you don't miss it. You see it.
You see it.
I know very clearly.
There you go. But you lay that parchment down so that you're not having the beans directly on the pie dough. And the oven was at 375 and I baked it for about 15 minutes and I pulled it out. And then I just took some Bosque pears that I peeled and I sliced them pretty thin and I laid them out in that cooled tart shell, essentially, in little concentric circles. So they went around. And then I made just a custard. So it was just an egg yolk, about a cup of heavy cream, 2 tablespoons of brown sugar, a quarter cup of white sugar, because I don't like things to be too sweet. You can add more sugar if you'd like. And I added a teaspoon of vanilla and a quarter teaspoon of almond extract and maybe like a half teaspoon of cinnamon and a few grinds of fresh nutmeg. And I mixed that all up and I poured it over the top. Then I took some slivered almonds or sliced almonds, I guess, and I put those over the top. And then I just took some white sugar and I sprinkled it all over the top. And I put it in the oven at 350 for 30 minutes, and then I cranked it up to 425 for another 10 minutes, and it like made like creme brulee on the top.
Yeah, it's perfectly
really
done,
good.
And it's beautiful to look at.
Thank you.
And it's not too sweet. You get the real sweetness comes from the pears, and the pears are pretty sweet. It's nice.
Yeah, I love pears. And we were talking before the show. Pears, in the 80s, when I first started cooking, pears were everything, because French was such a big influence on what chefs learned. We did poached pears, pear soups, pear salads, pear desserts, pear galettes, pear tarts. You don't see pears as much anymore, and I love pears. I think pears are like one of my favorite hand fruits.
Yeah, pears are great. And they're, you know, they come into season a little bit later than apples, so they're really great. Of course, make an apple pie for Thanksgiving. But if you want to do something a little different, do the pears. And it's just something different to look at. It's not a double crust. It looks like you know, you can see the custard in there. You can see the pear. You can see the little brown spots where it looked like you hit it with a blowtorch.
Yeah,
that's great.
It glistens a little bit, and it holds up really well. I picked one up. We had no plates in here when I first walked in, and I was hungry. So I just ate it with my hands, and it just eats like a little piece of pizza.
Yeah.
So it's great. And then if you want it to be a little bit sweeter, make some sweet whipped cream or some vanilla ice cream on top or something. But I don't like, you know, I'm a black coffee and like bittersweet dessert kind of girl.
You are. And pears love almonds.
Mm-hmm.
They go really well together.
Mm-hmm.
Pears love ginger. Pears love almonds in desserts. I think that's really good.
But this is, if you have a gluten-free pie crust recipe, works awesome for this. You can do that. If you are, you know, can't do nuts, you can take out the almond extract. You can take out the almonds on top. You could do like a little oat crumble. You could mix up like half a cup of rolled oats, old-fashioned oats, and some brown sugar and a little butter and maybe a pinch of salt and a little cinnamon, and just kind of mix that with your hands until it forms like almost like a granola.
Mm.
And then just kind of crumble that on the top just so you get the mix of textures going on in your mouth. You kind of get all spots
hit. Because pears are so creamy, right, when they're cooked.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break here. Deanna Fox and Rick Orlando here. Thanksgiving on Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. Oh, sure, there's always time for another trombone solo here on Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Thanksgiving edition, and Deanna Fox, and Rick Orlando here today. It's been a long week, I tell you. We talk Thanksgiving, and we go back to the phones. Sue in Valencia. Sue.
Hi, everybody. So glad to hear the show today. I was calling in related to the gentleman who talked about cleanup, and your ideas were great. But I think the one thing I would add to that is, Deanna, you had alluded to it earlier, prep is really important. That really helps with cleanup. If your veggies are chopped, you diced your onions, you get things all prepped as far as you can, that at least cuts down on some of the clutter the day of prep, the actual meal.
If you go onto the Times Union website, I actually have a story up right now that is about the week of, like, what do you have to do when you got to prep? You got, you know, 5 days to get her done. And you can find a lot of suggestions there. Just when the right time to, you know, actually cut your vegetables, blanch things, make gravies, make stuffings, casseroles, all that stuff. So to have a look at that. But prep is really incredibly important.
Yes. And using,
right. Thanks.
Using
I thought anything
helps.
You could add to that would be helpful.
Yeah.
Oh, anything you can add to that. Yeah.
Just, as far as prep goes. And also just like, you know, you're going to have people in your house, right? If you're hosting people. So just take a little time and think about, just clean the bathroom, do the surfaces in the bathroom, give everything a clean, wipe down, set your table the night before, even 2 days before, and just try to get as much out of the way so when you're actually in the morning of cooking and everyone wants to be in the kitchen, you're not totally frazzled and stressed out.
All right.
You mean like the relative who show up with the dirty, sandy cilantro and want to wash it in your sink?
Sue, thank you for the call and happy Thanksgiving. 800-348-2551. Is the number. And Susan in Niskayuna. Susan, you're on.
You're making me very hungry.
Oh, it's so great.
That's the
We're
point.
We're only going to have four people here for Thanksgiving, and we all like dark meat, and it's been suggested that we do turkey thighs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that one per person would be enough.
I would make one extra.
Yeah, do a couple extra.
Okay, so I'll do five. And also, would it be okay to, like, make my dressing and add, like, craisins and things like that and cook the thighs on top of the dressing?
I don't know, because
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that you would get really uneven heating times. Things wouldn't cook it the same
too
way.
Too greasy?
You'll definitely get fat, but also you're not going to get good heat on the bottom. You might have to overcook your dressing to do that.
Yeah, and you can
they be on a rack? Maybe.
Can I give my philosophy on that?
Yeah,
please. I never cook my turkey on a rack because
so I just put it on the pan.
Well, because the secret to making sauce is what the French call deglazing, which is when you add a little after you take it out, the little brown bits that are stuck to the bottom of the pan. And when you cook on a rack or when people cook turkeys on a bed of mirepoix, onions and carrots and celery, It creates steam, and you don't get those little brown bits, which give you that great flavor.
Yeah.
Gravy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I want the skin nice and crispy.
Yeah. Okay.
So you think that'll work for us?
Yeah. Yeah, season them well, and then if the skin's not crispy enough at the last minute, just turn on the broiler and put them under the broiler just to get the skin where you want it.
And that's at 350 for maybe an hour?
Yeah, it depends on how big they are. We just got turkey thighs from a farm in Vermont, and they were like 24 ounces each.
Oh, huge.
They were huge. They were like ostrich thighs. They were pretty good.
Oh, I just have to find a five-legged turkey now.
There you see. Perfect. Hey, Susan, thanks a lot, and thank you for the connotation of a mutant turkey here on Thanksgiving. Let's go to Evelyn in Albany. Evelyn.
Yes, hi. Enjoyed some nice meals at the bistro.
Thanks.
And one of the things we sampled, Rick, was the butternut squash hummus.
Mm.
Would you mind sharing the recipe?
You know, I believe that is also on rickorlando.com under recipes. Just search for hummus.
I don't have good access that way.
Well, I think the difference between that hummus and a chickpea hummus is that we actually substitute roasted butternut squash or pumpkin for the chickpeas. Uh-huh. Plenty of tahini, little lime juice, small amount of garlic. You don't want to go crazy with the garlic. Oh, you're writing it down?
Yes.
You know, this audio will be available online at WAMC.org.
And, you know, whip it good. We use a little bit of toasted cumin in that. And then when we make hummuses, when they're fully whipped in a food processor, the secret ingredient is water. Sometimes they come out so pasty and dry. You add a little more. I add a little salt to water, so it tastes like light tears. And then we add like a tablespoon or two of water at a time with the machine running until we see it get nice and fluffy.
You put tahini in it?
Oh yeah, plenty of tahini. Yeah. Heavy tahini,
and
about
tears.
Half and half.
Yeah.
Yep.
Half and half, and roasted squash.
Yeah.
Boiled squash wouldn't work.
Oh, it would work fine. Yeah, you won't get as many sugars from it, so boiled squash will be fine. Yeah, it depends if the squash is naturally sweet.
We grow butternut squash. We've roasted it. We've souped it. I've got a recipe for maybe people want to know about this. Butternut squash, sweet potato. And I'll put carrots in. You can put some dried fruit in. It's like understand what a tzimis is?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's what it is, a sort of a tzimis with brown sugar or maple syrup and put a squirt of lemon in and bake it up. And
sounds good. It sounds delicious.
Sweet.
So you got to make sure you get a nice briny turkey to go with your nice sweet vegetables. Perfect.
Evelyn, happy Thanksgiving. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Did you sneak a Devo reference in there? You whip it good. Nicely done there, Rick Orlando. 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando and Deanna Fox are here. We talk Thanksgiving. And Ray in Saugerties. Hello, Ray.
Yeah, hey, it's me, Ray in Saugerties. How you guys doing?
How you doing, Ray?
Love your show. Hey, listen, I've been doing traditional Thanksgiving dinners for years and years, and people were calling about the cleanup. And you know what? It's a really good tip is, have you ever seen the Reynolds browning bags? Well, you just put flour in your Reynolds browning bag, put your turkey in there, wash down, salt, pepper, and a cup and a half of water, and it makes a beautiful turkey that's not dried out, and they cook in half the time.
Yeah, it's kind of steamed while roasted. Hey,
look at it.
Hey, Ray, did you say
a lot of work.
Ray, did you say wash the turkey?
Yeah, I rinse my turkey.
Don't do that, Ray.
Why?
Oh, no. Rinsing your turkey is a great way to spread bacteria through your kitchen.
Is it really?
You don't really need to do that. There's nothing on the turkey that's really, unless you drop it in a pile of mud or something.
Right.
So just take paper towels and dry it. Pat it dry with some paper towels and get a little, at least I do it this way, I put a little salt on the skin just to help pull off some surface moisture.
If you put it in the back of the toilet.
Okay. Stop it.
Every time you flush the toilet, the water changes.
Check,
and it stays
please.
Clean.
Thank you, Rick Orlando.
Wait, that's how the British reconstitute their salt cod, because that's clean water in the basin.
Okay.
And so over the course of a week, the water's changed 50 or 60 times, and you have perfect bacalao.
What a great way to end my broadcast week, hey? Now let's go to Emily in Great Barrington. Emily, you're on.
Fact.
All right, fine.
Hello. Hi, hopefully we'll be very quick.
Okay.
Last year, smoked the turkey for the first time. Very excited, very lovely and tasty. But obviously, you don't have the drippings from roasting it for all those lovely hours. And I tried to make a gravy with turkey broth. It just didn't match up. So calling to kind of get ideas about what would be a better idea for that.
Well, we were talking about this earlier, right? You made gravy with chicken stock, but mm-hmm. you save your neck and your giblets and maybe your wingtips and brown those in a pot and then add chicken stock to that and let it simmer, and you're going to get the turkey flavor infused into chicken stock.
Two other suggestions, Emily, is when you make a gravy, you start with something called a roux, R-O-U-X, mm-hmm. and is equal parts fat and flour or cornstarch or whatever you're using. And try using, like, smoked bacon fat. Like, this weekend, cook some bacon in your oven and then collect those drippings. And make sure it's smoked bacon so you get that, like, really awesome taste. And then use that. And then you can also buy smoked salt. So I use that sometimes when I want to add like that bacon kind of flavor for my friends who are vegetarian, and get kind of that smoky flavor. So you can add that too. Just be careful. There's a lot of salt in the bacon. So when you salt things, like, taste along the way, have your little tasting spoon there and try that. But start with the bacon fat and see how that goes.
That's a great idea. I mean, because I tried it with my own my own chicken stock browning and all that. Just didn't stand up. So I like that bacon idea. I'm definitely going to use that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox is here and Rick Orlando. Thanksgiving, and we're getting you ready. Al in Amherst. Al.
Hello. How are you?
Hi, Al.
Hi.
Listen, a couple ideas. One, in terms of cleanup, one of the easiest things to do is go down to your local Rent Everything and rent a case of dishes and glassware and just stick them out on the porch and take them home the next day.
Yeah, we do that.
You don't have to wash them.
Yeah, that's good.
And it makes life just so much nicer.
Yeah.
And the other thought I had was when I brine my turkey, I like to brine it in apple cider. I brined it for a couple days, and then I fortunately had access to a walk-in fridge with a fan unit on it. And I know that when you're making like a Chinese Peking duck or something, a lot of times they air dry the duck in front of a fan to get the skin all crispy. So brine it and then put it in front of a fan, if you have that, if you can figure that out. And your skin gets really crispy.
Yeah, really good.
I do that when I do, like, I make a chicken on Monday nights, and I salt and pepper the skin. I dry off the skin with a paper towel, and I salt and pepper it, and I just leave it in the fridge uncovered until I'm ready to cook it. So I do that Sunday night, and then Monday night I cook it. And what that does is it just pulls off, especially even in a regular refrigerator, air is circulating. So that air will pull off any moisture. When you have too much moisture on meat, it prevents it from creating carbon. Carbon is the synthesis of protein, essentially. So that's why like a charred grilled steak tastes better than a boiled steak, because you're getting moving the moisture and getting that. So you can do that with any cut of meat, and it works really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just in your regular fridge.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call, Al. We appreciate it. And let's see, who's next here? Looks like Diane. Diane in Bennington is on. Hi.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Hi.
I was listening to the gravy dilemma, and I go out and I buy turkey wings and turkey legs, and I roast them in the oven with a bunch of carrots, onions, and celery, and then I take them and put them in a big pot with chicken broth or with water, whatever, and I cook it and cook it and cook it until I have this wonderful broth, and I do that several days beforehand. And I've even done it weeks beforehand and frozen it.
Absolutely.
And then I use that to deglaze the pan when the turkey comes out, and it's fabulous.
Yep, that's the secret.
No muss, no fuss.
No, the secret. Making a good stock is the secret, and you don't have to buy a whole turkey to do that. That's right. And wings have so much collagen, which means they have so much flavor.
Mm.
That's one of the secret ingredients, especially the tips of the wings.
And really good for you.
Mm.
Just good for your body to take in that collagen.
All right, Diane, thanks for the call. This one came in via email. What website gives the timeline for preparing Thanksgiving dinner? And that's from Christine.
That's on timesunion.com.
And that's your thing?
Yes,
on
I wrote
Times
a piece.
Union?
Yep.
So look for Deanna Fox.
Just search up in the search bar, Deanna Fox, DEANNAFOX.
All right. And now over to David, who is on the Mass Pike. David, you're on.
Yes, hi. You may have touched on this earlier, but if I smoke my turkeys, and I have plenty of room. So if I want to do two or three turkeys, I mean, is there an optimal size for turkeys?
Optimal size, you mean for quality or for how much do you need per person?
For quality. I'm looking for quality. I want, in the end, somewhere between 25 and 30 pounds. Am I better off cooking three 10-pounders?
I think probably two 14 to 15-pounders. There's a point where the ratio of breast meat to leg and thigh meat gets a little out of whack with those really, really big turkeys. I think a 14 to 16-pound turkey is just about right.
Hmm.
I think that's my favorite size.
Okay.
All right, great. Oh, and one more thing. For the woman who asked about smoking the turkey,
yeah.
I smoke my turkeys on a grill inside a pan, and I get the pan juices that way.
All right, David, thanks for the call. Interesting email from Michael, who writes, I had a turkey a few years back that was basted with Listerine. Delicious. Anybody hear of this?
No.
I would not recommend that. I'm guessing that Michael is having some fun.
Minty fresh.
Minty fresh. It probably prevents the dreaded gum diseases.
I don't think that would be a very good idea. Robin in Del Mar. Robin, you're on.
Hi. I was shocked to hear Deanna talk about not washing your turkey. Do you not wash all of your poultry that you get from the store?
Never.
We don't.
Ever wash any poultry. Don't wash meat. There's no point. It's like an old wives' tale. I don't know why people still promote that.
Especially since you're cooking it.
Yeah, there's really nothing. Yeah. Rinsing it is not going to do anything. If there's germs or anything on there that you're concerned about, rinsing it is really not going to help it. If you have liquid that's on the bird, you know, when you get it out of the package, that's just its own liquid. It's not anything, a preservative or anything like that. So just, you know, I in the sink, I actually, if I get a chicken that's wrapped in plastic, I cut it in the sink so that the juices, you know, fall away. They don't go all over the counter. But when you rinse it, there's water droplets that splash everywhere, and you get that everywhere. And it's a great way to, like, just introduce all sorts of disgusting bacteria that you don't want, bad bacteria, into your kitchen. So just pat it dry with some paper towels that you'll throw away, salt and pepper it, do whatever you're going to do to it, and then just make sure you wash your hands when you're done, and you're fine.
All right, very quickly to Pat in Athol. Pat, you're on. You only have about 30 seconds.
Okay, I'm bringing creamed onions, and I'm tired of the onions in a white sauce. What can I do to make them tastier?
Okay.
I don't know, but I love onions in white sauce.
You can use some sweet cooking wine like Madeira or Sherry in there. We'll add a nice essence to them, and maybe a couple of fresh bay leaves.
Oh, there you go.
We'll add a nice aromatic to them.
Sherry is like the number one thing for Thanksgiving. Add it to your gravy, add it to your sides, add it to everything.
Take
just a
couple
bit.
Swigs.
Yeah. So good.
All right, Deanna Fox, how do we find out the latest about your doings?
I'm on Instagram and Facebook, Fox on Food, and my website is www.foxonfood.com.
And Rick Orlando.
I'm on all the social media as Chef Rick Orlando, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, etc., and rickorlando.com, no K in Rick.
Well, thank you both for being here. I hope you both have a great Thanksgiving, and thank you for all the tips today. Support comes from Warwick Valley Farmers Market, the 25th season of bringing fresh from the farm food ready for the table, weekly new foods from artisan vendors on Sundays 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., warwickvalleyfarmersmarket.org. 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Seasonally inspired pub fare, now offering traditional wood-fired Neapolitan pizza, catering menu, and hours, 20railroad.com. Rolling Rock Farm, salt and seasonings, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salts, peppers, and blends, specializing in garlic and hot pepper blends, rollingrocksalt.com. And the Egremont Village Inn, presenting Ophira Eisenberg of NPR's Ask Me Another, with Adira Amram on Friday, November 16th. Saturday night, Grateful Dread. That's Grateful Dead reggae band. TheEgremontBarn.com. Well, that's it. Thanks again to Deanna and Rick for being here. Thank you for listening and for the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who's been eyeing the turkey now for a full hour. It's time, Zach. Barb King took your calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks again. Have a lovely weekend. Alan will be back on Monday for a Medical Monday. Right now, stand by for news. We'll